This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 66. Good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what the title says it is. It's a show focused on everything to do with fantasy books, and I mean everything from epic fantasy, urban fantasy, swords and sorcery, horror fantasy, you name it, we've got it here on the show. You can expect to find the best and brightest authors and others from the various corners of the books and fantasy world, and I'm really excited about that. We try to bring those things to you every week. For my update this week, I'm finishing up the first draft for my guide to audiobook production for indie authors. That'll be coming out hopefully before the end of this year. I'm also kicking into gear with plotting out book 8 of my Extreme Medical Services series. It's always fun revisiting this series. This is a place, a world where a select group of paramedics are tasked with treating the hidden supernatural creatures that live in their city. It's my first series, my first book that I ever wrote, and it's something that I always enjoy revisiting. And actually, the first book in that series, which is titled the same as the series, Extreme Medical Services, is free right now for a limited time in all of the ebook stores. So if you want to pick up a copy and check it out, you can. As always, if you're interested in more information on my books and what I'm up to, I urge you to check out my fan group on Facebook, Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers. Also, my website and blog at jamiedavisbooks.com. And you can find me on my author page on Facebook, too, at Jamie Davis Books. But either way, get in touch with me. I look forward to hearing from you. It's always fun to check out with listeners of the podcast with what you guys are up to. Let's go ahead and get into our author interview for this episode. Fonda Lee is on the show today. Fonda is the author of the Greenbone Saga, beginning with Jade City, which won the 2018 World Fantasy Award for Best Novel, and continues on in book 2 of that series, Jade War. She's also the author of the acclaimed young adult science fiction novels Zero Boxer, Exo, and Crossfire, which are pretty awesome as well. Fonda's work has been nominated for tons of book and literary awards. She won the Aurora Award, Canada's National Science Fiction and Fantasy Award, twice in the same year for Best Novel and Best Young Adult Novel. She calls herself a recovering corporate strategist. She's a black belt martial artist and action movie aficionado. She lives right now in Portland, Oregon. Here is my interview where I got a chance to sit down and chat with Fonda. Fonda, I want to welcome you to the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. It's great to have you on the show today. I'm just excited to have you here.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
So why don't you do us a favor? And I'm sure there probably are a few people out there who may not have read your books, and I want to make sure that they get to know you as best as possible. So why don't you introduce yourself to us?
Yeah, so I'm Fonda Lee. I'm the author of a number of science fiction and fantasy novels. I've written for young adults, and I've written for adults. My most recent work is the Greenbone Saga, which is a fantasy series for adults that is a gangster family saga that I have on a few occasions referred to as The Godfather with Magic and Kung Fu. So it is an epic fantasy, but it takes place in a modern era setting in an Asia-inspired metropolis, think late 20th century. And the defining feature of this world is that there is a thing called bioenergetic jade. So it's kind of like jade in our world, but it has the power to give people who wear it what you think of as the superhuman kung fu martial arts powers that you see in movies, the ability to leap great distances, to steel themselves against harm, to channel their chi into an opponent, and so on. So that is the premise of the series, but the story is really about this family called the Call family, and they are one of the most powerful jade-wearing families in this fictional island of Kaycon. And they find themselves in this conflict with a rival clan. And really the story is about this war between the clans, but also the war for control of this magic substance and the changing times that are affecting this island.
Yeah, I just started Jade City yesterday, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it. Especially the Call family, and they're just intriguing. And the idea of this gangster family is pretty interesting to me. Especially probably because I wrote it actually a kind of a Boardwalk Empire meets epic or meets urban fantasy series myself, and explored kind of that gangster prohibition era kind of thing. And I like your take on the more modern era gangster families as well. So it's kind of intriguing to read another author's take on a similar topic.
Yeah, I'm definitely taking a bunch of things that I enjoy and blending them in this series, because I've obviously inspired by epic fantasy tropes, but also martial arts, wuxia fiction, and gangster mafia stories, and they kind of all came together. And my task in this was to kind of blend them seamlessly into what felt like a very real secondary world.
Well, it's fascinating, and I'm really enjoying it. What got the impetus to have jade be the magical substance that they'd be mining for? Was that just because of the Asian influence that jade seems to have, at least from my aspect, from Western culture?
Yeah, so magic substances of some sort are a tried and true staple in fantasy. They often have magic crystals, magic gemstones, magic swords. So I wanted to do a twist on that. And obviously because it is set in a world that is analogous to an East Asian culture in our world, jade has always been the most revered of precious gems, more so than even gold or diamonds. So it made sense, because it was already, I guess, figuratively magical in our world, to make it literally magical in this fantasy world. And I wanted something that would kind of be a way for me to also create the culture of this, of these green bones, these warriors who can wield this magic, because they use it as ornamentation, but also a status symbol, because it is what gives them their power. They're wearing it in piercings and necklaces and rings and that sort of visual status signaling, plus like the body modification culture aspect, all came together nicely. I mean, I was doing a ton of research into all sorts of different organized crime groups, and like the Yakuza are very well known for their full body tattoos. So having some sort of visual element to this culture of these green bone warriors was an important thing. And the jade tied into that nicely.
And one of the things I really like is it's not just about the jade giving power, because yes, it does. But there's and that underlying culture that makes the green bones who they are. They aren't just who they are because of the jade itself, but they have this underlying, I don't know, ethos about them.
Yeah, I'm kind of a world building junkie. I love making secondary worlds. And one of the things that I really believe is that what makes a world come to life isn't just the setting and the maps and the language and all that, but the little things, the day-to-day cultural things. So things like the slang that the characters use, or the way they greet each other, who sits where when they're at a meeting. Those sorts of things make a place feel lived in and make a culture ring true. I wanted to show a world that had this juxtaposition of this sort of ancient honor culture in the Greenbone Warriors, with the modernity and progress that's going on in this fictional city. So here's a place that it's an island that has for a long time been relatively isolated from the rest of the world. And it's the only place in the world with this substance. So they have this sense of ethnic exceptionalism. And they're in a world that is rapidly opening to international trade and to foreign intervention. And they recently fought a war of a generation ago, this war of independence to kind of throw off colonial occupation. So this is very reminiscent of of countries in Asia post World War II. And so I wanted to kind of have that be sort of a running theme. Obviously, in the foreground, the characters are always taking up space, but in the background, there are these things going on in the society.
Do you find that there aren't enough Asian-inspired fantasy stories out there? I mean, I grew up watching so many martial arts movies. You can't. I mean, there was something that was on every Saturday afternoon, and I made time. I made sure my chores were done so I could come in and watch Jackie Chan and Bruce Lee and all of these classic martial arts characters in their films. It surprises me looking at your stories and just a few others that there aren't more stories out there inspired by that type of cultural influence and bringing in Asian fantasy elements to their stories.
I think there are getting to be more. I think we have for a long time thought of epic fantasy as just defaulting to the tradition of vaguely medieval, vaguely Northern European, and elves and dwarves and orcs and dragons. That has been generally what people immediately think of when they think fantasy. And I think in the last several years in particular, there's been a broadening of that. We're seeing a lot more fantasy that is inspired by other time periods, by other cultures, Middle Eastern, Asian, African. And I think it's a great thing to see because, medieval Northern Europe it's like a few hundred years in one relatively small part of the world. And there's so much more history and culture to draw on. And in the past, when there was fiction that was set in Asia and written in English, it was generally written by people who resided in the West, and so there was kind of this distance or this exoticism, to it. Like the few that I can think of might be like Clavel's Shogun or Bridge of Birds, ones that were decades ago, and so you're also just seeing a lot more writers in this generation who are writing from their own cultural ancestry and background and feeling more able to do that. So I'm hoping we'll see a lot more. I think it's all great.
It's interesting. I've got an urban fantasy story about paramedics who treats group of paramedics who treat supernatural creatures, and I started trying to work other mythologies into what I was doing, not just fairies and vampires and werewolves, but to try to bring in other types of shifters and other types of mythological characters from other places. But it was daunting when I started doing some of the research because I really was afraid I was going to misrepresent something. My daughter's constantly telling me I write like a middle-aged white guy. And, that's a not bad thing, I guess, but I need to be able to broaden my horizons. And what do you say to an author out there who wants to try to represent other cultures, whether it's Asian or any other culture, but is fearful of making a misstep?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I can say anything that'll like alleviate anyone's particular fears or give permission, because I think you do have to write from a place of authenticity. And that can be different things for different people. For some people, it is they have a cultural or ancestral connection to something. It could be for somebody else that, you know, they lived in a certain place for a long time and really want to represent it. It could, and you know, it, whatever it is, I think you have to sort of start by asking yourself, well, you know, why am I the right person to do this? Or what is my connection? Like what, why is this the story that I want to tell, whatever it is? And it could be very much, I think there's a difference between, hey, I want to write, something that represents a particular experience. So if you are not, you know, an immigrant and, to a particular country or a particular culture, or you're not, let's say, African-American, are you able to write the African-American experience? I would argue that, you know, you have to ask yourself that hard question. But let's say you're writing a fun space opera, then, absolutely, you should make sure that the world that story is taking place in reflects the real world, or the diversity and the world that you want to represent. So there's a difference between I want to put more types of characters into this story, and I think your example is a good one. Of let's say your story is in New York, and there's paramedics. They're running into mythical creatures. I mean, New York is an extremely culturally diverse place with immigrants from all over the world. Of course, there would be all sorts of different mythical creatures. There wouldn't just be, you know, orcs and trolls. There would be, you know, djinn and, all sorts of different mythical creatures. But, and I think my advice there is just to make sure that you are doing your research, that you're not carelessly throwing things in, and just kind of not doing your due diligence and perhaps misrepresenting something because you haven't, you haven't crossed your I's and dotted your T's. But if it's something that's more central to the character's journey, if it is a coming out story, if it's a story about being a minority, you know, you have to ask yourself, like, why am I writing this, or what's my authenticity?
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. That's exactly the take that I took on it. I played it from the paramedic side of things and just had him learn about his patient, and then I sent it to a Japanese exchange student that I had known from high school days years ago, and asked her to just read over that chapter because it was a one-off encounter, and I just said, is there anything in here that doesn't ring true to you? And what can I do to fix it? And she seemed to like what I'd found. My research was good. And we kind of left it alone. But, you know, I think that using the resources I had available, I was able to make it work on that and several other occasions. But I agree with what you say. You really have to, like, look at you have to have respect for what you're doing and understand your own motivations for why it fits in your story.
Yeah, definitely.
So I know the second book in the Greenbone Saga just came out, which is Jade War. And I can't wait to get to it because I'm like, you know, got a ways to go yet, but I'm looking forward to it. What's the plan for this series? Is it a trilogy? Are you looking at it as more of a long form format for a series?
It's a trilogy. So it will conclude in the third book once I'm done writing the third book, which I'm doing right now.
Yeah, it's funny. I think in trilogies too, and I know other authors that don't, but you know, it seems like that three act story structure also lends itself well to an overarching series structure too. And so even in the series that I have that have gone longer, I tend to think in three book chunks as I go along.
Yeah, well, honestly, for me, it was just because that was the number of books my publisher wanted. You know, you write the first book and you hope it sells. And in my case, my publisher was like, how about a trilogy? So at that point, I was like, okay, let's do this. I think trilogies are appealing because they certainly give you enough books to tell a very involved story and really feel immersed in the story world. But they aren't going to drag out for, you know, so many volumes that it's just too daunting to invest in them. I feel that way if I see a book series that appears to have no end in sight. It's a barrier to even begin. So so trilogies are nice in that respect.
You know, speaking of series that had no end in sight, I noticed on your Twitter feed that you recognized the latest edition and announcement for the Wheel of Time series for the part of Lan. You had mentioned that you'd made a comment or retweeted something about Daniel Henney getting the role for that casting, and wondered, are you a fan of that series? Because I remember starting that series years ago, and finally getting to the end was quite a marathon.
Yeah, so I'm one of those individuals who started the series a long time ago, and I think I got 2 or 3 books in, and I'm stretching here because I read it when I was a teenager. And then I had the lack of commitment to follow through on the however many 14 books I believe it is.
Yes.
So I'm hoping, you know, with the adaptation, I'll have I may not tackle the entire novel series, but it'll be nice to have an alternative way to consume the rest of the story that I didn't get to.
I slogged it out all the way through, and I have to be honest with you, in the middle, I was skipping whole sections just to try to get to characters I cared about anymore. You know, and that taught me a valuable lesson for when I started writing later on, was to keep it as simple as possible. Even in my longer series, I still keep it centered around a few main characters and don't go branching off into the broader world too far.
I think it also really depends on the inclinations of the author. I think some authors are just very happy to write in the same world and with the same characters for however many books, 10, 12, 15 books. And there are other authors like myself that have a ton of other ideas. And I don't want to write 10 books of anything because I will never get to my other ideas. So you know, it's also just a matter of whether you're the sort of author who wants to do that or whether you'll get fatigued and be like, okay, what's the next thing here? Because each book might take, you know, a few hours or a few days for a reader to read, but it's a year to 2 years or more for an author.
Yeah, and for me, it's kind of like I go into other projects, and then it's kind of like revisiting an old friend to come back and write a short story or a novella or something to revisit, you know, that Paramedic world, which is the one that's really my first series, and it's just kind of fun to kind of come back and like I said, kind of visiting old friend.
Right.
So what's next on the list? You're working on this, and that can take time, obviously. But I know, you know, there's always other things in the works. I know you have other books like your science fiction novels like Exo you've got a lot of books out there.
Well, for the foreseeable future, it really will be focused on finishing this third book in the trilogy. And after that, I've got some ideas. I'm working on something that I can't talk about yet. If you'd interviewed me about 2 weeks from now, we could talk about it. But unfortunately, I can't talk about it. But it's fun and exciting and definitely a change of pace from my novels. And after this, I've got some other ideas. I definitely have more adult fantasy and science fiction novels that I want to tackle. I may go back and do another YA science fiction thriller because I really enjoyed writing Exo and Crossfire, may go back and play that space. So yeah, there's definitely stuff. But it's all kind of taken a back burner for a little bit. I have an idea for a graphic novel that I would like to do. And I may do a novella just to like reset myself after writing an epic fantasy trilogy. I've been fantasizing about writing something short. So we'll see.
It is refreshing, even if it's just a short story, to kind of, it's like the palate cleanser when you're at a 7-course meal. You get that little bit of sherbet right between things.
Right, yeah.
Definitely. I'm curious, because I've written both fantasy and science fiction, is there one that particularly appeals to you more than the other? Or do you really have a love for the stories that go on in both places?
I don't prefer one over the other. And I think the reason is because the fantasy that I write tends to be very grounded. I'm kind of a minimalist when it comes to fantastical magic powers and tech. So you'll notice the readers of the Greenbone Saga will know that the magic is not that magical. It's certainly not something that exists in our world, but the characters don't call it magic. There's no mention of spells or casting, or the word magic is never even used. And that's because I want both my science fiction and my fantasy to feel very human level, I guess. Like the focus for me is always on the characters and their interactions and the politics and the conflicts that are going on. And I think the magic and the technology is just kind of like the veneer of the conflict. And so the magic rocks in the Greenbone Saga are very much a resource. They're mined, they're processed, they're cut up, they're shipped and sold. They are treated like a product from an international trade perspective. They also have spiritual significance. There's different factions that are fighting and killing each other for control of it. But it's treated very much like an analogy for things that we have in our own world, whether it's money or drugs or power, greed, etc. So that is a long way to say that I don't feel like I approach the writing of my science fiction and fantasy differently. And so as a result, I'm agnostic between them, because it really just depends on kind of the story I'm trying to tell and what's the right milieu to tell it in, whether that's a futuristic world or, another planet or a secondary world altogether.
And I get that sense from reading, because it is really about an enhancement to the individual, I think, rather than, an overt magic, like you said. and I picked up on that. And it's, you're right. I think what carries a story best is and makes the magic or the science fiction technology believable is real characters with real problems that are relatable to a reader in today's world.
Right. Yeah. For me, I had a vision very strongly from the start of writing this, that it would be about a family. And through the lens of this family, we would be immersed in this city and this culture and this country. And I knew I'd written young adult science fiction before, but I knew this would be my first big adult project, and it suited it well because there were multiple points of view, and each point of view is a different member of this family, and they all have different things going on with them. They're in different positions and different insecurities, and they're rubbing up against each other, and so there's friction in this relationship between them. And they're also having to fight like bloody duels against enemies and stay together as a family. So so that's kind of how I managed a narrative that could have spiraled into this huge thing with just dozens of points of view and all these countries, and which sometimes happens with epic fantasy stories, the scope creep. And that is something that that I think is that authors have to kind of keep a handle on, because when you have excessive scope creep, you're kind of losing the focus of what's the main point here? Like what are you trying to focus on? So the Cull family and the main characters in particular, are the lens. They're the focus by which I like keep the story tight, even though it does, you know, sprawl to three big books. And the characters are, they're four siblings. And there's, you know, the sort of the responsible elder brother, and there's this hot-headed middle child, and there's this younger sister who's left and come back. And then there's the young, their adopted sibling who is basically a high school student and trying to find his place in the clan. And each of them, I love putting characters in situations where there is no good answer. So each of them ends up having to compromise and do things that they don't want to do. And that's the fun part of like having a cast of characters, is you can play their decisions off of each other and really kind of play with the subtlety of their relationships.
Well, I think people will look forward to should look forward to reading Jade City if they haven't already, and get started with this series. One last thing as we kind of wrap things up here. I know you like to you mentioned in the questionnaire I sent you that you like to meet people firsthand, face to face at events and signings and cons and things like that. What's that experience like for you as an author to be able to talk face to face with your readers?
I really enjoy it because it reminds me that this work is being read by real people. It's, you know, writing can be a very lonely experience sometimes because you're by yourself with this brick of a manuscript for so long. And you often feel like you're just, banging your head against the wall by yourself, you know, chiseling these words out of concrete. And at the end of the day, being able to go out and meet readers who, you know, tell you that they stayed up all night reading your book, or, you know, they love this character, or, you know, they drew this fan art. I mean, it all kind of hits home for you that, yeah, you're toiling at this thing by yourself, but it goes out and touches a lot of people, and it makes, if it makes, you know, their day better, if it takes them away from whatever is kind of on their mind in their day-to-day life, if they really connect with the character and they feel like they've been seen personally through this fictional individual, that makes it all worth it. You know, it gives you the fuel to go back and look at the screen again and keep going.
You know, I'm always struck by those people that mention to me some aspect of a story I wrote or a character that I represented that they seem to have picked up on something that I wasn't even aware of initially, something I subconsciously maybe wrote into the story. But it's gratifying that people find so many hidden things within the work. Don't you agree?
Yeah, definitely. I've definitely had a few of those experiences. And it's always a... just brings a grin out when they happen. I've had, you know, it happened on a few occasions. One was actually with my debut novel, Zero Boxer, which came out a few years ago, and it's about a martial art. Basically it's like Rocky in space. It's a sports story, but it takes place in the future, and it's about a up and coming young prize fighter who's competing in zero gravity combat. So there's a lot of martial arts and fighting in that book. And I had actually a reader who got in touch with me and asked me if the main character was left-handed or right-handed. And I answered and said, you know, that the main character was left-handed. And I got a response back that was, I knew it. And this is why, because on this page in the final paragraph, he does this series of techniques, and I thought he's got to be a lefty. And like, that was the sort of thing that like, I was like, oh yeah, like that one person, you know, something that I thought through, and put on the page, but never expected anyone else to really notice. But, you know, that one person out there noticed that. I was doing a signing for the Greenbone Saga, and there's a scene on one of my characters, Shay. She has, you know, a business degree, and there's a scene where she's actually auditing this company, this mining operation, and what she finds out ends up being a plot point. And I had someone come up to me at a signing and say, "I'm an accountant, and I just want you to know I really appreciated how Shay used forensic accounting in that one scene. I've never, you know, seen anyone use an accountant in a book like that." And like, you know, for most people, they read that scene, they got the point of like how, you know, that affected the plot, and they moved on. But, you know, for this one reader who was an accountant, she felt seen in that moment. And that was pretty cool.
It's great to like have them like find themselves in that story, you know, that something that of themselves that was represented correctly. Right. And it makes you kind of feel good.
Right.
So we wrap up here. FondaLee.com is where people can find all about you, get on your newsletter and check out all your books. And then Fonda J. Lee on Twitter. Is there anywhere else people can expect to find you online?
That's pretty much it. Yeah, my website, Twitter, I'm on Facebook. I keep a posting of my events on my website. So if readers happen to be in the vicinity when I come by on events, I'm always happy to see people. That's pretty much it.
Awesome. Well, Fonda, thanks so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. Maybe when you have that secret hidden project ready to come out sometime in the future, we can have you back on the show and talk about that. I'm already excited to find out what it is.
Sounds good.
That will wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you catch up with us online. We have a whole lot more to offer for you from the whole fantasy-focused community. We're affiliated with the fantasy-focused community on Facebook and over at fantasy-focus.com, where you'll find the actual podcast living on that website. Just click the podcast tab at the top of the page, and that'll take you to the most recent episode. And if you're looking for any other episodes, scroll down there. I mean, we've got 60-plus episodes, folks. We've talked to a whole bunch of authors in the last year, and we've got more to come. Also on that website, when you're on the podcast episode pages, don't forget, if you haven't already done so, to subscribe to the show. You can actually just click a link, and for a lot of you with your mobile devices, it'll automatically subscribe or give you an opportunity to download an app that is a podcatcher for your device, whether it's iOS, Android, or if you use apps like Stitcher or TuneIn, you can subscribe as well. But make sure you do. It's a great way to make sure you don't miss any of the upcoming episodes. As I said, we've got some awesome authors coming up. That includes author and publisher Joseph Malik, who's coming on the next episode. So keep up and check that episode out. You won't want to miss it. That's it for this episode of the show, though. The Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast is done for the day. As always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis. I'm the author of Fun Fantasy Reads. So don't forget to follow me over on Facebook, either as Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers, which is my Facebook group where we talk about all kinds of fantasy books, not just mine, and over in my Facebook page, Jamie Davis Books, or my website, jamiedavisbooks.com. And I hope you'll check all of those sites out depending on what you're looking for, because it's always great to reach out to you. Whatever you do, though, make sure you subscribe and come back here to the next podcast, because we've got some good stuff coming, like I said. And in the meantime, I want to remind you, please keep your eyes open, folks, because you never know when you're going to see some of that magic that's all around you.